Oh yes, and before I, by the way, this is Rico. You haven't met me too much during the show, but Rico Galliano here. And before we move on to talking about the State of the Union address last night, I just have to say the oatmeal cookies have arrived.
Ian Chillog provided best song of the world today and oatmeal butterscotch cookies. Somebody wants a raise. That's all I'm saying.
And it is sweet. All right, you might be forgiven when you were watching President Bush give his final State of the Union address last night for experiencing a sense of deja vu as he discussed his favorite projects. Iraq, No Child Left Behind Act, Patriot Act, more money for AIDS research. He's hit those talking points before, but he also copped to some downsides, the struggling economy, the housing crisis, and the war in Iraq. Joining us now to help break down the speech is Newsweek's senior White House correspondent, Richard Wolff. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, but, you know, I don't think I can follow either the tape or the oatmeal cookies.
No, Richard, you've got a fabulous accent. You can follow anything.
This is true. British always wins. So, Richard, let me start out with what I found most surprising here. Instead of hitting a positive note off the bat, Bush goes straight to the economy, which is not exactly at its strongest right now. And I'll play a clip here. He admitted that short-term growth is slowing.
As we meet tonight, our economy is undergoing a period of uncertainty. America's added jobs for a record 52 straight months, but jobs are now growing at a slower pace. Wages are up, but so are prices for food and gas. Exports are rising, but the housing market has declined.
So, did that surprise you as much as it did me that he went straight to the downside?
He feels our pain. And no, it doesn't really, because I don't know how you could do anything in Washington right now without talking about the economy. The issue has surged, no pun intended, at the polls.
Oh,
and if you look at his track record, there are very few areas where Democrats and Republicans have actually come together in ways that he said they promised they would in his first State of the Union address. Mm. One rare example, one rare exception, is actually this economic stimulus package that they're currently hammering out in Congress.
So that's really going to happen? Something bipartisan will actually happen, you believe?
Yeah, because everyone's running scared. Mm. There are elections around the corner, and people know that the economy has risen to the top of the heap when it comes to voters' concerns. So, yeah, that puts pressure on people to do something.
All right. Well, he didn't stay downbeat for long. Hoping to lighten the mood about the economy, he even managed a joke when talking about the need to renew tax relief.
Others have said they would personally be happy to pay higher taxes. I welcome their enthusiasm. Pleased to report that the IRS accepts both checks and money orders.
All right.
Yes. How we laughed.
Yes. All jokes aside.
The point here is that one minute he's saying we should all come together and do something, and next he's taking a swipe at Democrats over taxes, which, by the way, did not have to expire in an election year, but thanks to Karl Rove, they actually do. I mean, this is playing politics with a wedge issue that Republicans can unify behind, and again, I hate to hark back, but this is the symbolic timing of his last State of the Union sort of prompts the comparison with his first one. Mm. And when he came to Washington, it was all about civility. We're going to change the tone in Washington. Making that kind of joke, yeah, it's mildly amusing. It's not Jon Stewart, but it's mildly amusing. But, hey, that's not how you actually get people to work together on an issue like this.
Well, speaking of which, so the tax cuts he wants the tax cuts to become permanent. Will that happen? And also, there's talk now again of rebate checks again. Is that something that's got any traction? We tried that once before, did we not?
Well, the rebate checks really do have the prospect of passing because, again, people in Washington want to look like they're doing something quickly about the economy, and that's a very quick way to do things. And economists generally believe that tax cuts take too long to come into effect. By the time they come into effect, the economy typically has come out of recession. So the rebate checks, the economists have a problem with rebate checks because they're not enough, generally,
sure,
for any impact. But I think that is likely to happen, but tax cuts becoming permanent in an election year when Democrats control Congress, I don't think so.
All right. The president next headed back into the dark side of the economy, which, again, surprising. The housing crisis, which is, again, something that you probably can't avoid in this day and age. Praising his own Hope Now alliance, he also suggested that Congress can do more.
Tonight I ask you to pass legislation to reform Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, modernize the Federal Housing Administration,
and allow state housing agencies to issue tax-free bonds to help homeowners refinance their mortgages.
So no surprises here, right?
No surprises. And it's very complex to fix the housing market. There's all sorts of moral hazard involved. Who's to blame? Who are you bailing out? How do you assess which homeowners are worthy of rescue? Mm-hmm. Incredibly complex. I think this is going to be hard to pull off.
All right. The president also took it. This is interesting that you're talking about something hard to pull off, because I think this is the king mother of all of this. He took a defiant stand on earmarks, and he turned the blame on the Congress.
I also ask you to stop slipping earmarks into committee reports that never even come to a vote. Unfortunately, neither goal was met. So this time, if you send me an appropriations bill that does not cut the number and cost of earmarks in half, I'll send it back to you with my veto.
Now, it occurs to me that earmarks are not unique to the last few years. Why has this become such a recurring beef with Bush?
By the way, I just want to say, I think that was the funniest line of the night. I mean, I guess it's hard to, maybe I've been in Washington too long, but everyone stood up and applauded, and they were all chipping and hooting, and Bush looked at them and just got into this fit of giggles, because it's so ridiculous.
That's right.
Everyone says, yay, we're going to stop pork barrel spending.
It is true. I saw this, there was sort of a standing ovation, and it was sort of weird watching a bunch of people who were responsible for the behavior applaud their own ceasing to do it. Yes.
I'm disgusted at the guy next to me, as long as I can keep my own piece of pork. why has it become such a big issue? Because traditionally, Republicans are the party of fiscal restraint, or at least they like to think of themselves as such. And the president, having blown the budget all these years, wants to reclaim some of that. But it is incredibly hard. I mean, everyone wants to see everyone else's pork. And look, he's got a point. People are pushing through spending and no one gets to vote on it. It's wrong. It's plainly corrupt. It's not in the national interest. It's in parochial interest. But the system has worked this way forever. It's incredibly hard to stop it.
All right. Well, we move now. I think we're going to wrap it up here pretty soon. But we move to what I call the mystery item in this speech, something called Pell Grants for Kids. So let's first hear how the president introduced this concept.
And to open the doors of these schools to more children, I ask you to support a new $300 million program called Pell Grants for Kids.
Okay, to quote one of our staffers here this morning, what the Pell? Is this something new? What does that mean?
No, it's been around forever, but generally Democrats have liked to talk about it more than Republicans.
But what is it?
It is what it sounds like. It's a program targeted at families living below the poverty line, however you define that, and to help them with educational costs. But it's notoriously underfunded. It's very, very popular, but it is very underfunded. And I think he talked about $300 million. I mean, it's a drop in the ocean of what needs to happen. So it is a popular program, but typically, again, it's popular with Democrats, not Republicans.
All right. We're running out of time here, but very quickly, he also talked about bringing home 20,000 troops eventually over the course of the next year, I believe. Does this number seem significant to you? Is it large enough to make a difference to people who want the troops home?
He wants to claim the mantle of the guy who started the withdrawal of the troops. In overall numbers, no, it's not hugely significant. And it can't be significant because the politicians in Iraq have not managed to figure out how to want to live with each other. But look, he had a good story to tell about violence, and you've given that space and that time to do so.
All right. Richard Wolff, thank you very much. Richard Wolff is Newsweek's senior White House correspondent. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thank you.
Next up on the Bryant Park Project, magnetic fields. You want to know what the big whoop is with these guys?
Yes.
The guy who literally wrote the book on the pop rock band, L.D. Bechdel, is here to talk with us. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.